This is Circulating Ideas. I'm Steve Thomas. My guest today is Kristen Lalonde. She's an access services librarian and circulation department manager at the Chippewa River District Library in Mount Pleasant, Michigan. You can find her on Twitter at shinyinfo. Kristen, thank you for joining me on the show today.
Well, thank you for having me, Steve.
Well, the first question I've got is actually not so much of a question, but a rating scale that I need you to elaborate for me. So I need you to rate the following from bad to the worst.
Okay.
A is Aquaman with a harpoon hand.
Okay, gotcha.
B is the Season 5 A-Team theme song.
Ugh.
C is Murder, She Wrote episodes without Jessica.
No.
And D is mainstream media articles about how quirky librarians are.
Oh, man. I was just complaining about that yesterday. Well, I was complaining about all those things, probably. Okay. So you want me to say least worst to most worst?
Most worstest.
Most worstest of all. Oh, man. That Season 5 theme song of A-Team's pretty bad. But I just watched the Murder, She Wrote episode where Bill Maher was solving a murder. And so that was pretty much the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. So I'd say that
Bill Maher with 80s hair, too.
Right, 80s hair. He had a mullet. He had, like, part of his shirt was ripped so you could see, like, a nipple. I'm like, why does this exist? So I'd say that's the worst of all of them. And then one level above that would be the theme song for the A-Team on Season 5, which was completely unnecessary and the worst. Well, not the worst, obviously.
Second worst.
And then I'd say the articles about quirky librarians, because I'm really tired hearing about that already. And Aquaman with a harpoon hand, because, I mean, it's still Aquaman, even though he's got a crazy beard and no shirt, and he's just off, like, completely gone crazy. But he's still Aquaman, so.
He still has all the same powers and everything. So.
Exactly. So, you know, that's my determination there.
Yeah, and I always wonder on those Murder, She Wrote episodes, was she off doing a movie or something at that time, or were they just trying to do some spinoffs, or what was going on there?
Here's some Murder, She Wrote lore for you. According to Wikipedia.com, I think that's where I read it.
America's trusted source of information.
Exactly. As a librarian, I could tell you, Wikipedia. Anyway, from what I remember, Angela Lansbury was like, I am doing too many of these episodes, and I'm worn out. So if you want me to do another season, you got to get these other people in here. And they did try to do a spinoff, like the guy from Law & Order.
Yeah, the Jerry Orbach.
Yeah, they tried to have him do – none of them worked, because I'm sure – if I'm any indication, any of the true Murder, She Wrote fans probably hated them all. They're like, I want Jessica Beck forever. So –
yeah, I don't think Father Dowling counts as a spinoff since Tom Bosley left the show and was a different character. So.
Well, maybe he's in witness protection.
You're now a priest.
Yeah, I mean,
Amos Tuppo, you're now a priest.
Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of opportunities to witness a murder in Cabot Cove, so I feel like that's really, you know, possible.
I detect a Tumblr post coming from you about that. So.
Yes.
That theory.
Conspiracy theories about murdershewrote.tumblr.com.
And how Amos Tuppa dropped his accent. So.
Yeah. I mean, he had to, you know, he's trying to live his life in the witness protection program. It makes perfect sense. And then he tried to sell Glad bags later on.
And this is all after raising Richie Cunningham and all that, too. So.
Yeah, he's lived many lives.
Okay, well, back to the reason you're on the show, which is, of course, Aquaman.
Right,
you did write on your blog, it was about a year or so ago, you brought Aquaman and librarianship together.
I did, yes. Well, I said when I, in the new 52, Aquaman is aware that everyone thinks he's dumb and he's, but he's still going out and saving people's lives all the time. And they're not, you know, they don't really fully understand everything that Aquaman does for them because they're too busy. Oh, Batman, he's so cool. Whatever. Aquaman is out there saving your bacon. He's keeping all these undersea creatures from coming up and murdering everybody. He's doing his darn job, but he's underappreciated. So I feel like librarians often feel that way. It's like, hey, you know, we're doing all this stuff behind the scenes, protecting privacy, doing all these things, and we feel like, oh, you know, we just don't get enough press or recognition of the Batmans of the world. And I don't even know who necessarily would be the Batman that I'd be comparing to in the world, now that I think about it. Whoever gets a lot of good press for doing cool things, I guess.
Celebrities, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, that's right. Whatever the young people are into.
I don't know what the young people are into.
I don't know either.
The Instagrams or the Facebooks, I don't know.
Right, Snapchattings around, swagging it up, from what I understand. But yeah, so when I was reading Aquaman, I'm like, oh man, I feel your feels, Aquaman. I'm feeling them. I'm like, you're out there saving our bacon. We just, you know, we don't appreciate you enough.
And librarians are saving people from undersea creatures and stuff, too.
So. Yeah, I do that all the time. But also the cool thing with Aquaman, he also is just like, whatever, man. You don't have to like me. I'm just going to do what I do and just deal with it. Whatever. Got my own stuff going on.
So do you think that's what bugs people like you and me and other people, I think, when those quirky librarians articles come out, that it's sort of people are still, they're not having that Aquaman attitude. They're still craving that attention and they still,
right.
It's like being in high school. You have to be the cool kid. You can't just do the right thing and do it for the right reasons. You have to be recognized for being cool too.
Right. I mean, everyone likes getting recognition for doing good things. And that's totally, you know, that's totally understandable. But if that can't be a means to your end. So, you know, if the only reason you're doing something is so that someone might write an article about you or have you on a podcast, meta, then it's probably, you probably should reevaluate maybe what you're trying to do. One thing, I mean, there's several layers to why those always bother me. One being like, the people aren't really super quirky anyway. They're kind of just normal. Like, oh, librarians have dyed hair. Like, whoa, nobody has dyed hair. That's so crazy.
Is that a tattoo keeps peeking out of that arm?
Right. Like, whoa, what? Oh, my God. They're like real people. And then also on the flip side, what if you don't, you know, have dyed hair or tattoos or, you look like or an old lady with a bun in her hair. Suddenly that's the worst thing you could possibly be. They're like, okay, now you're kind of flipping it to where, oh, we should all meet this different standard now.
Yeah, my thing, I think I finally, after kind of thinking through it, especially after the latest round of those, I think it comes down to, I think it's really important for us, and I understand we want people to understand the work that we do. I think when those articles focus more on the push that I don't like is the look how great we are individually as people when we should be pushing look how what great things we're doing, and that's right. Really what to me, I mean, because I realize there is a layer of seemingly hypocritical of me saying it because I'm doing a podcast about librarians, but my whole point of trying to do this is to, I'm not saying you were saying that, but that I'm trying to push the look what great things librarians do. This is why you should love this profession, because we do great things. Not Kristen is great because she's a great person and because you're a horrible person.
I mean, right? Yeah. Obviously.
No, but you know what I mean. I mean the whole point of once the thing is completed, sort of, wow, librarians do great things, which we'll hear about the great things you do later. But that's sort of what my point is and what I would like those articles to focus more on.
Yeah, absolutely. My favorite thing is whatever pun title they use. It was like, oh, a librarian died. She checked out. Right. Or whatever. I was like, oh, God.
It's like every article about comic books has to be zap, pow, comics aren't for kids anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, we all know that. Please move on, please.
Well, we've kind of been having a little fun here so far, but I wanted to kind of translate that into what a lot of times what people were reading on your various social media things that you're posting on is that you obviously have a lot of fun.
I do.
At your workplace, not even just on social media, but you're sharing the things you do there. Do you think that's really important to make sure you're having fun at work?
I do. I think so. So if people don't know, I am a circulation manager at my library. So I'm in charge of a lot of part-time staff, a lot of whom are college students. They're probably only with me at the max, probably 2 years, and they graduate, and they're really busy, and, you know, I try to have fun with them, and I also have fun with my colleagues as well, where, you know, it just makes things, I feel like it greases the wheels, to say, hey, we're all trying to work together, we want to work together on a project. If we all get along really well, it, you know, I feel like it's easier to get people on board with your idea or your project and say, yeah, I'll help you out with that or whatever. So, yeah, I think it's very important. It makes work a lot more fun because, I mean, being a librarian is fun regardless, but sometimes it's not. And then, you know, it helps you get through times when it's not as fun as other times. So, yeah, I think it's great.
Right. And you mentioned that you're working with the student workers. Is there anything specific you do about to have that relationship you have with them? I mean, is it just you have the fun, but obviously, I mean, you're supervising them too. And
right. So, yeah, that's one thing. I try to toe the line between I want to have fun with them, but I also want them to remember at the end of the day, I'm still their boss. And I did one thing I try to keep in mind is when I was working part-time, sometimes when a boss would try to be like, hey, guys, I'm your friend. Hey, fellow young people. We're just all hanging out. We're just all equals around here. And that really used to, like, make me mad. It's like, well, we're not really equals because you could fire me at any time. So this is all just, you know, bullcrap. So I try not to make it seem disingenuous. So, you know, I do like to have fun at work, but I don't try to force it. Usually what I'll try to do, I always have the mentality of whatever you do, do not, you know, don't make anything mean. Don't, you know, don't demean anybody. Make sure you pay attention to people's particular needs. Like I have several people on staff who are gluten-free and have other allergies. I always ask, like, you know, is there anything you would like me to know? Because I like to bring in donuts or cake or pizza sometimes. And the worst thing in the world would be like, oh, yeah, I'm bringing in all this stuff, and you can never have any of it, ever. You can just watch other people enjoy it. So whenever I do that, I always try to, like, okay, well, I'll go get a bag of gluten-free cookies as well. Or when I was down in Detroit for something, there's a gluten-free bakery down there. So I grabbed a box of donuts and brought them in because you can't get gluten-free donuts here in my small town. So I always try to be inclusive. And I also try to take into account people's personalities because some people like to joke around in a specific way. And some people don't like that at all. And I definitely don't try to force, you know, my particular sense of humor on anybody. Right. So
you will laugh at me or you will be fired.
Get out of here. Yeah, I know. And one thing I noticed, other, like I said, in the past, other bosses, they'd like to joke around like, ha, you're fired. I'm like, ha, you could actually fire me. That's not really funny. Please don't, like, stop joking about that. So I don't joke around. I don't say those things. I try not to enforce my like, ha ha, I want you to remember that I own you. But yeah, like I said, some, I like to joke around with some of them in different ways because I know that's just how, what their personality is, and then I don't with others.
Right, and then like you said, you know the balance that, because those books still need to get shelved. Right, we can't just sit around here joking for the whole day.
So. Exactly, right. And what I don't want to happen is set up a scenario where it's like, well, I don't want to tell you that you didn't do something because we're buddies now, and I don't want you to not like me. Like, I don't want them to not like me anyway, but it's like, I want you to know, like, I'm being fair here.
Well, and you've mentioned your on Twitter before your propensity for saying sorry to everything. So.
Right, I do. I always feel so bad about everything. I can't help it.
Can you go shelve those books? Oh, I'm sorry.
No, please. You know, I mean, if you have time, you know. At first, that's how it was really, like, at first when I first started, because everyone there, I didn't hire anybody there. And also, I didn't know what I was doing. So I'm like, well, how do you do this? And how does the library do this? So I was in charge of them, but I didn't know how to do anything. So I felt really weird asking anyone to do anything because I'm like, oh, they all know more than me about this. Now, though, I feel a little bit better about, you know, like, oh, could you do this? And I always try to explain why. It's not just like, oh, there's just some busy work because I don't like you. Definitely don't, you know. Try to keep it in perspective. Like, here's why we're doing things, so it doesn't seem so arbitrary.
What's like a typical day for you? What kind of stuff do you do as well? What's your exact title? It's not circulation manager. It's
Access services librarian. Yes. So it's a small. I mean, it's big for the area. I'm in mid Michigan, and I'm in a college town, so we have like a main library. And we have branches in smaller communities in the surrounding area. So everybody who works in our library has multiple jobs. So I'm circulation manager, but I also do collection development for multiple collections. I also do reference. I manage the volunteer program. I help with outreach. I do, you know, do a bunch of different things, help with programming. So typical day could vary. Like right now, I just hired 5 new pages. So most of my days are consumed with either being on the desk or training pages or starting new pages, answering emails, anyone who has a problem with it, like, you know, fines or hey, we can't find this. There's a book that's been in transit for a month. We can't find it. Let's go, you know, go try to find it. It's a lot of that sort of thing. But also I have a lot of irons in the fire as far as schemes and plans for the library goes, different projects. They got to keep going. Like, we're going to be going to the farmer's market again this year, so I have to plan that out with our marketing guy. And okay. We're doing free comic book day this year, and I'm helping with that and all those sorts of things.
Well, let's start with that. I imagine it would drive you crazy to use this term, and I've never heard you use this term, but embedded librarianship, where you put yourself into the community. That's sort of the terminology or the library field likes to use. But you do that, even if you wouldn't use that term.
Right. Yeah.
Well, you're putting yourself out in the community. You guys do that a lot of where you're. You're going to the farmer's market, you're doing things like that. How often do you do that, and what do you think is important about doing that as opposed to waiting for the community to come to you?
Well, we started doing that more when I started because our ILS moved to a web-based ILS. And actually, this was one of my pages, Angelo, he brought this up where he said, hey, do you think it's possible to go to the farmer's market? I said, well, right now, it's not really possible, but we could make it possible. It's like, well, we're going mobile with our ILS, so what we'd need to do is get, you know, what kind of services are we going to offer while we're out there? What's possible? We need to have, you know, access to the internet wherever we are, so we're going to need like a MiFi or some sort of hotspot. So I have to submit requests with IT for that, and I also have to get a secure a laptop and a scanner. And so there's a lot of planning that went into that. So we kind of developed that together. And I worked with the marketing, our marketing guy, because I figured being embedded librarians, it's important just from a CERC point of view, but also a librarian point of view. But the marketing guy would really want to get in on it because we've got a lot of stuff to market. And really being out in the community is kind of a marketing, is a marketing realm. So I talked to him about it. And he really got on board because we're doing the Geek the Library campaign as well. So he's like, oh, this is perfect. Anywhere we go, we can promote Geek the Library too, as well as our services. Once I was able to set up like a mobile circulation desk, basically, which is a tote with a laptop and mobile Wi-Fi and a select number of books and whatnot, depending on the subject. Once we're able to do that, we can really take it anywhere. Actually, this Friday, we're going to be going to, there's a senior services expo in one of our branch communities. And so wherever our marketing guy goes to set up a table, he asks me if we can have a circulation desk there, which I feel underlines the importance of really connecting with people in your institution. That's why I wanted to talk to the marketing guy first, so that it doesn't, you know, it's like, hey, we're in this together, we're working together.
Right.
So it moves from me trying to get him involved with one of my schemes into he just asks me if I want to get, you know, oh, do you want to get involved in this? And I say, sure, let's do this.
So do you guys do those kind of things often?
We do. Pretty much wherever we can set up a table. Like we were at, the last thing I was at was, it was like a business expo that the Chamber of Commerce puts on. And so pretty much any of these, we're a small town, so there's not like a ton of big public events going on all the time. So we try to get involved in all of them as much as possible. So like there's big business expos, there's fairs, the farmers market. We got the Senior Citizen Expo. So in the past, we've always had tables with information. But now that we can do the mobile circ, we can actually offer services. We can sign people up for cards, check people out. We could renew. I've renewed books before. I've answered people's reference questions out there. It's like, oh, well, how do I – do you guys have ebooks? Where do I go for that? Like, oh, let me show you on this laptop. Boop, boop, boop. Yeah, we do that all the time, and I feel like it's pretty important to really get out there, because people will sometimes know where the library building is, but it's if we can get them where they are at, they're already going to be, where the crowd's already going to be, to, hey, did you know, you haven't been in the library in a while, did you know we have video games now? Or back when you used to come, we used to charge for DVDs. Now we don't do that anymore. Come and get some DVDs. Or, you know, we get $2 in free printing every day with your library card. Those sorts of things.
It's just a good way to let people know, like you said, what's going on at the library. Because if they're not there, they're not. I mean, because usually libraries tend to just, oh, we put up a sign in the library.
Right.
Saying this, it's like, well, but people have to, number one, come into the library, number two, read that sign.
Right, yeah. And people don't read signs pretty much ever.
Right. So you do these all these things where you're going out into the community, but you also obviously do programs within the library, and one of them that you mentioned was the Free Comic Book Day one. Can you talk about that, of how you do that and how that started and how that works out?
So we have a programming department in the library, which is really nice, and our programming team is awesome. And the lady that I work with in the programming department, her name's Rebecca, and she does all our family programming. So it's basically any elementary school age kids up to teen. And I approached her with the idea because I always wanted to do a Free Comic Book Day thing. Even back when I worked at the museum, we wanted to do something with Free Comic Book Day, but it's a little harder trying to fit it into the museum frame because we had such a narrow point of view as far as like what services we offered and what like what how could we spin it. So once you're in the public library, like, oh, all bets are off. This is for the public. Anything can be related to the public. We're doing it. So I approached her about it, and she thought that was an awesome idea. So basically,
For people who don't know, what is Free Comic Book Day?
Free Comic Book Day, it's a thing that Diamond Distributors does. Diamond Distributors is the big comic book distribution company, institution. Anyway, they're the ones where comic book stores buy pretty much all of their comics from. And they have this thing. It's called Free Comic Book Day. It's the first Saturday in May where comic book stores will buy, quote, free comics, which are really super, super cheap. They're like, I don't know how much they cost, like between 10 and 30 cents a piece from Diamond Distributors. And on that Saturday, they'll give them away for free. And each comic book store does a different thing. Like, some people will turn it into this big, huge event, like Green Brain Comics in Dearborn brings out artists, and they do drawings and all this. They have a band and all this stuff. And some other places just give out the comics. But basically, the idea is to introduce people to comics. It's like, oh, this is a great way to learn about different things. And the big publishers, like DC and Marvel, they have specific Free Comic Book Day comics. And usually they'll be like, here, our Free Comic Book Day comic is going to have a short little story containing some of our more popular characters. And they'll help you kind of get into whatever's going on at the moment. And then in theory, you would then go and buy comics as well while you're there and really get into it. So
this Spider-Man is very interesting.
This, what is this Superman? So yeah, it's, so you get the cool thing with Free Comic Book Day as well. They have the big publishers, but also they have a lot of the independent publishers. You know, and then, like, Dark Horse usually have the, well, probably not anymore, they'll have the Star Wars ones, and there's the Simpsons one, and, you know, there's a lot of them focused towards younger kids, but also there's, you know, whatever's popular at the time. There was a Walking Dead one last year. There's just a lot of smaller ones, and the store can choose whatever things you want to give out. And the cool thing for libraries is Diamond Distributors will give you free comics and you don't have to pay for them. So, but their deal is, a lot of the publishers donate a bunch of the free comics that people didn't buy. So whatever is donated throughout that year is equally distributed amongst the libraries that have signed up to participate in Free Comic Book Day. So you can get, like, a cache of free comics to give out at your library. You might not have to pay for it. So that's nice, too.
Free is always nice.
Free is always good, especially for library budgets.
And so what did you guys do last year at your library?
So last year, we hooked up with our local comic book store, which is Hall of Heroes, in Mount Pleasant, Michigan. And we said, hey, would you be interested in doing a Free Comic Book Day thing with us? And we approached it in a way that we understood that for a comic book store, you know, they want to get some profit out of it. And so we didn't want to distract anyone or take any of their crowds away. What we wanted to do were share a crowd, basically people who go to the comic book store but don't realize that the library has a big graphic novel collection, and alternatively, people that come to the library all the time but never think to go to the comic book store. We try to, you know, get people to move around. So what we did, we came up with this idea of a punch card where if you come to the library or go to the comic book store and get your free comic, you get it stamped, and then go to the other place, get a free comic there, get it stamped, and then put your name on it, and drop it in a box to win a free long box of comics from Hall of Heroes, who's giving away a free long box. So we figured, hey, that's a really good, that's a good idea to kind of drive people from one place to the next. And Michael, who runs the store, told me that he saw a big bump in the crowd when we decided to start working with him. So he was very interested in doing, you know, doing stuff with us again. And last year, other stuff we did last year, since it was on May 4th, which is Star Wars Day, we did a bunch of Star Wars related things as well. The 501st Garrison in Michigan, which, if you don't know, they are Star Wars. I don't know if it's appropriate to call them cosplayers.
that's what I would call them, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they, it's like, oh, that's not the right term or not for this, for their specific thing, because they go.
We'll avoid nerds.
Since we're these geeks, Jonah. No, they, you can ask them to come to specific events. So for like a birthday party, and they're nonprofit, so they don't accept money. What they'll do is, you can donate money to a specific charity instead of paying us. So we asked them to come, like, have some people come out and do, we thought, oh, it'd be really cool to have a photo station where people can come and get a photo taken with Star Wars characters. And they were really awesome because, as you would imagine, on Star Wars Day, pretty much everybody who is in that group is already in demand for stuff. He's like, oh, yeah, I've got like 3 weddings to go to and other parties going on today. So it was really nice that they came out. There's a Darth Vader, the guy dressed up as Darth Vader, Leia, and another guy.
Some stormtroopers, probably.
He was a stormtrooper. They all came out. It was pretty awesome because the Darth Vader guy was huge, and they had a guy following them around with a boombox playing the Imperial March when they came through the library. And when the characters came through, because they got dressed in our annex and then came through the library to go downstairs, it was amazing because everyone was just like, and just like stood to the side and watched, like, oh my God, Darth Vader's coming, oh my God. And so that was really awesome. And they really liked being there and taking pictures with all the kids. So we did that. We had people coming through and talking throughout the day in our meeting room. We had Randall Scott. He works at Michigan State University. He's a librarian there. And if you don't know, Michigan State has a huge comic book archive. It's gigantic. It has, from what I remember, it's the largest one of comic books, if I remember correctly, in the country. Because they collect not only American comics, but international comics. He collects absolutely everything. And they have extremely rare items. And so he came in to talk about his stuff. We had a artist come in, a comic artist, and he was drawing, but also giving away prints of his art. And we had games, and we're giving away comics. So that was really fun. So, well, yeah.
Okay, so that's obviously a big thing for you guys, and you guys also in your library collect comic books as well. And that is one of the things that's under your purview, I believe you said.
Yep.
And you are now, and recently we had a Twitter conversation involving a couple of comic book creators.
Oh, I know.
and so is this a new thing that you've just taken over, the graphic novel collection?
I did. Yeah, actually. So normally I just collect nonfiction. My background is in history. But the director, who was the one collecting for graphic novels, he knew I was really into comics and graphic novels. So he said, hey, do you want to do this collection from now on? Like, yeah, I do. Heck yeah. So starting this year, I was able to take over the graphic novel collection. I've been super excited about it.
And you're wanting to buy a lot of comics that are by female creators and more diverse creators and things like that, such as Kelly Sue DeConnick.
Yes, I
know. And Gail Simone.
Oh man.
And lots of there's lots of other great not so many in the mainstream comics, but
right.
And there's good characters that are you can get as well that are maybe written by men but are still good characters like the Batwoman stuff. So.
Oh man, I love Batwoman. She's the best. But anyway, yeah, absolutely. So from a collection point of view, what the bread and butter of the collection is always the superhero comics. Those always go out circ-wise. So I do have, I mean, I always gotta get those. Like I always gotta get the new Batman and the new, all the new Walking Dead and all those things. So those are the make sure, you know, for the community, make sure you get those because everyone really loves those. But I also want to try and get lesser known things, things that people probably who read a lot of comics would definitely know about, but not necessarily everyone would know existed. Like I know Kelly Sue's Pretty Deadly. That trade is going to come out, but I'm like, okay, gotta get that. Gail Simone's The Movement just got canceled, so when that graphic novel comes out, I gotta get that. Things like that. Where it's like, okay, we gotta have these things. It's like, oh, you know, they're great. We want to make sure to get people hooked on them. So, hey, I should read more of these. I mean, that's the idea anyway.
Right.
But yeah, definitely. It's like, okay, I want to highlight, you know, with some of my budget, I want to go towards like the really big blockbuster stuff, obviously, but I want to highlight some of the, like if you go to the Drawn and Quarterly catalog, a lot of those, the memoir type things that are pretty good.
It's like when you're doing an entire, just even the book, the regular book collection, you got to buy the James Pattersons and the John Grishams and all that too, because people want that. But then you fill it out with some other stuff as well that you want to introduce people to.
Right, exactly. Things that you think, you know, have a lot of really good merit as far as artistic value.
Unlike you, James Patterson. Slam.
Boom. Burn.
Cross that.
Yeah. Gotcha, you millionaire.
he's going to blacklist this podcast.
Yeah, he is coming after you. But yeah, pretty much that's how I approach it. So I definitely want some things that are a little harder to find, like any, because I also read a lot of webcomics, and they usually will come out with physical books. The Kate Beaton will have stuff. The people who do Diesel Sweeties, I just put one of his new books on my list. Like, oh, these are great. But you wouldn't necessarily know about them unless you read about it. So I'll book talk it and put them on the sleigh.
That's Rich Stevens, is that his name?
Yep.
Stevens, yeah. Rich.
Yeah, who has interacted with me on Twitter, because I'm super cool.
Retweet.
But yeah, I know. I did a cross-stitch of Patrick Swayze from the movie Roadhouse for my mom for her birthday, and it says, pain don't hurt, but I did it in the style of Richard Stevens' characters, so they're basically pixelated. So I tweeted the picture to him, and he enjoyed it. I'm like, yay, hey, we're best friends now.
It's not creepy at all that I stand outside of his house and look into his
window. I see you faving that tweet, friend. Yeah.
Now, when I first met you on Twitter a couple years ago, you were still at the Arab American National Museum.
Right.
And that sort of ties into what we were just talking about bringing diversity into things. Did you learn a lot at that job about more bringing diverse cultures and to the rest of the larger culture?
Right, yeah. Well, that's pretty much the mission statement of the museum, is to highlight Arab American culture and contributions of the Arab American community to people who wouldn't necessarily know about them. So they have a lot of class visits, and they do a lot of, there's a lot of teacher orientations talking about those things, try to get things like that into classrooms, as well as just kind of the general public who's interested in those sorts of things. So I was the librarian there, So my main job was to collect anything written by or about Arab Americans, which is difficult to find because there's not like a catalog. These are all the new things that are written by Arab Americans.
Right. Like, okay. Coming in this month.
Right. Exactly. That'd be great. So what it really taught me was to connect with the community, because the only way I was going to find out if something got released was somebody telling me about it. So I made a point to connect with people like authors and artists and musicians. So like on the internet, on Twitter, but also emailing them and just getting them involved. And most people are usually pretty excited that a museum wants to include them in some way, especially if they're younger. Because it's like, oh, museums are for people who won a Nobel Prize or whatever. Right. It's like, no, oh, it's a living museum. We're talking about people's day-to-day lives, and you are artists contributing great things, making awesome things. Well, of course you want to have your stuff in our library. So, you know, I'm like, oh, tell me, oh, you have a new thing? Tell me about it. Tell me about other things you like right now. All that kind of stuff. So it really taught me to really, we were talking earlier about getting out into the community. That's really where it came home for me at the museum, because I really had to find things to put in the library. I really had to connect with people and get that information.
Right. And when you were there, you also used to write a lot about how to be a solo librarian, because you were kind of by yourself, and that was sort of a thing that happens a lot in the special library community, but some other smaller libraries have to deal with that. And I assume social media helps that out a lot with that, because you're able to connect with people outside of just yourself.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It is kind of hard as a solo librarian. If you're working in an organization and you're the only librarian there, it's sometimes really difficult, because you know, you're always having to show your worth, like, this is the library, this is what we can do for you, like really try to jump on people's projects. Hey, the library can help with that. I can help you with that. This is why we need the library, everybody. It's super important. And so that gets really tough sometimes. So it's really nice. The internet's a really great way to connect with other librarians. Be like, well, have you encountered this situation? What did you do about it? You know, here's something, you know, here's a specific scenario. What kind of tools have you used for this? And it's really nice to be able to talk to people across the country in that way, especially other solo librarians who are kind of in the same boat. And so in some ways, I miss being a solo librarian, because I was in charge of the whole library. So my...
You can go mad, you know, with power.
Right, exactly. My dictator that exists inside my soul was super excited. Like, all right, this is my domain. So when I moved to the public library, I'd be like, okay, we're a team now. I'm connecting with all these different departments. And we're all going to be buddies.
At the museum, you were Aquaman, leader of it, King of Atlantis, but
right,
then exactly. You had to join the Justice League when you...
Exactly, Steve. That is exactly true. It's like, listen, I got my own stuff going on in this department, known as Atlantis, is the search department. But, you know, sometimes you gotta talk with Superman about stuff. Superman being the director. I guess it would depend who you believe is the head of the Justice League, whether it's Batman or Superman.
Poor Wonder Woman is never her.
That's in my heart, it is.
All right, well, let's wrap it up with bringing those two important topics together, Aquaman and libraries again.
Right.
What do you think the libraries in Atlantis would be like?
Wet. They'd be soggy. I was trying to think about this. Like, how would that work where they'd be able to have, you know, pass along information underwater? Maybe some sort of tablet, like clay tablets. Those stick around underwater. Something. I couldn't think of anything. E-books definitely wouldn't work down there.
No computers in Atlantis.
Right. All the paper would get soggy. So it's got to be on some sort of impermeable, you know, surface. So maybe they have like a Sumerian cone. Then again, they might be able to just, you know, it's an oral history tradition. So it's mostly probably programs. There's a lot of programs, story times.
a lot of fish talking and learning how to.
Right, exactly. So there's a lot of really cool. There's a lot of cool demonstrations. So I mean, it's a lot of that going on.
Make it happen, fish. Yes. Kristen, tell everybody how they can find out more about you online. Where are you available online?
I'm available everywhere online. I am Shiny Info on pretty much every social media platform: Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr. My Tumblr is mostly GIFs of Benedict Cumberbatch, though, so it's not like super library related. And Instagram, again, not super library related, but you know, if you want to chat, hang out internet wise, that's where you can find me.
And you have a blog, which you don't post.
I don't update it. I'm a terrible person. And I
but it's very library related if you go there. So.
Right. I try to make the blog library related, which is why it's not updated very often. I'm like, oh, I should make this super like professional. I'm like, oh, I can't.
I will create this Benedict Cumberbatch gift, though.
Right, exactly. If I can just kind of I have a really short attention span, which makes Twitter suit way easier for me to handle. So, occasionally, in between talking about MacGyver and the A-Team, I'll talk about libraries occasionally on Twitter. So you might catch me there.
All right. Well, Kristen, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Talk to you later.
Later. Bye.
If you'd like to learn more about the podcast, you can visit circulatingideas.com, or you can follow the show on Twitter at @circideas, or on Tumblr at circulatingideas.tumblr.com. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/circulatingideas. And if you have comments, questions, or suggestions for future interviews, you can contact the show at circulatingideas.mail@gmail.com. Music is by Pamela Klicka. Thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join me again next time.
Make sure everything's recording, because I don't want to talk for an hour and then go back and record again. Let me ask you the same questions again.
I'll try to sound as enthused the first time around.
Wow, what a great question I've never heard before.
Whoa, this is new information. You go, what?
Such as name-dropping Kelly Deuce. I want to say her name wrong. I'm going to edit that out.
Okay.
restart.
I have the Super Friends. I just checked it out from the library. So I'm going to watch that at some point. Watch Aquaman surf on like a dolphin. I'm expecting that to happen. I don't know if that really happens.
Well, we did watch one Super Friends where Wonder Woman and Aquaman are a team together going somewhere. And she hops in her invisible jet and flies there. And it cuts to Aquaman swimming there. It's like, oh, come on. You couldn't have given him a ride in the invisible
right.
jet.
Like, oh, no, no. Well, like, oh, no, you catch up. See, do you see what Aquaman has to go through?
Well, see, I will say they do arrive at the same time, so.
Oh, we'll see.
He's
there
a pretty
you go.
Fast swimmer. So.
He is. I mean, if anyone was a fast swimmer, you'd definitely expect Aquaman to be. It'd be pretty sad if he's like, oh, I can't really.
Oh. I'm kind of afraid of swimming. I can only do a doggy paddle.
Right. Like, oh, you had one job.